This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach and ADHD Coach Jeff Copper. We got a great show tonight, ADHD Brain Waves Made Simple. And with us in our virtual studio is Jeff Geniak. We're going to get into the meat of the show in a little bit, but real quickly, tonight is January the 22nd in the year 2014 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A couple announcements real quick. We've been talking about this for, I think, for the last month and a half or so, but the 2014 Transitions Conference is around the corner, January the 31st, and Lynn University in Boca Raton, Florida. I'm thrilled. Actually, I'm going to actually be presenting down there, but we've got a lot of other Attention Talk Radio frequent flyers that are going to be presenting down there. Dr. Russell Barkley, who's been on the show multiple times, is the keynote. Rob Todisco, who we've done, five, six, seven shows with, he'll be there. Dr. David Now, Dr. Patricia Quinn, and many more. So, I'm not sure if they're sold out yet. If you're listening tonight or tomorrow, check it out at lynn.edu/transitions. And for those people that have corresponded with me, please, I'm looking forward to seeing you down there. Come up and introduce yourself if I don't already know you, because I'm looking forward to checking out. And I'm looking forward. I got two presentations. One in particular, we're going to talk about shitting all over yourself, which is going to be a gas. I got a lot of cartoons and multimedia and some really wild examples. It'll be kind of fun. Also, the ADHD Coaches Organization Conference is not that far away. It's going to be in Phoenix this year in early May. Know that you do not have to be an ADHD coach to go this. Matter of fact, if you're thinking about being a coach or in the area and you have ADD, go check it out. It's actually kind of wild because I know that I'm going to be speaking of that with a ton, probably like half a dozen, actually, two dozen probably people who've been on the show before. I know I'm going to be talking about attentional blindness, which is going to be very experiential and a lot of fun. To learn more about the ADHD Coaches Organization Conference, go to ADHDcoaches.org. And with that, I think that wraps up our announcements. Okay, let's get into tonight. This is actually a very, very special show for me because as I've ventured into this, I was a coach first, and I'm starting to begin to understand the mental health side and actually the physical brain side, and we're going to talk tonight a lot about what really how the brain actually works, at least in my opinion, and then we're going to talk about some budding science, and we're going to talk about some cutting-edge type stuff that I think has got a lot of promise, not only just now, but in the future. But Jeff Geniak is on the show, and real quick, a little background on him. He grew up in a small town in Canada, the son of a psychologist and social worker. He's always displayed a passion for helping people, and is one of the youngest people in North America to be certified as a practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming at age 15, which is pretty kind of incredible to me. I'll refer to that as NLP, and as for our listeners, we actually had Richard Bandler on our show back in October of 2011, who was one of the co-creators of that, actually talking about that program. So if you're interested in that, go check that show out. Jeff studied psychology at the University of Windsor for 4 years before becoming a clinical hypnotherapist and a licensed master practitioner of NLP, and also a world-renowned expert on brainwave entertainment and brainwave stimulation. I want to kind of highlight that because we're going to talk about entertainment, but really stimulation kind of in the middle of the end of the show, which I think is going to be kind of cool, and really I think what a lot of you are going to be interested in. We'll talk a little bit about the brain a little bit leading up to that, but just note that. Jeff's first book was published in 1999, The Secret Skills, and it appeared in The Adventures in Manifesting Success and Spirituality. Jeff is also creator of the top-selling products such as Perfect Sleep System, The Achievement Blueprint, Gold Factory, and Brain Fitness for Busy People. He's created nearly 100 acclaimed meditation and brainwave programs, and it's no surprise that Jeff is considered by today's top thought leaders as a leading creator and innovator of brainwave stimulation technology. As he's created several unique proprietary technologies that continue to revolutionize the field of brainwave entertainment and personal development. He currently is researching the advantages of stimulating subdominant brain activity over dominant brain activity as a means to improving memory and attention for people with ADHD. And with that, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm really excited. In leading this, you and I had a little conversation, and I learned a lot, and I'm actually anxious to learn even more. To kind of tee this thing up, as I'm learning, the brain is like a low-voltage electrical system, and you have, I mean, these electrical impulses are moving all around your brain, all over the place, but they go in different wavelengths, and those wavelengths mean kind of different things, which I want to talk about a little bit, and I think they're named with some Greek lettering, but those wavelengths actually are different in terms of the thought process, and what's unique, interesting to me is the notion is if we can use external stimulation to impact that, then we actually can manage your thought process or attention as a result of that. So I've said that. Can you speak to that a second? Did I misrepresent that? Am I on par? And we'll get into things.
Yeah, Jeff, well, that's really the basic crux of it, is that when we put EEG machines on people's heads that measure electrical activity in the brain, what we see is that what we're looking at is dominant, for the most part, brainwave activity. And so based on what people are doing or experiencing at any given moment in time, we see changes in their dominant and subdominant brainwave activity. And like you said, they all have Greek names and these funny names, right? But they represent specific ranges of this low electrical brainwave activity. So we know, I could be looking at EEG readings from any given person, and by looking at what I see there, I can, with pretty good accuracy, determine what it is that they're doing, whether they're asleep, whether they're engaged in something, you know, a high-attention activity, or maybe whether they're having difficulty attending to something. So it's really fascinating about studying the brain waves and what it means to personal behavior and emotions.
Now, we're talking about brain waves, and in a little bit we're going to be talking about cycles, and I think that is like a wave, if you will, at the beach, just to give everybody a visual. And the cycles is the frequency of that of the waves in an integral of a second. So we might be talking about 8 to 12 cycles per second, and that's just the frequency of the waves as composed to maybe 12 to 39 cycles per second. That's a more elongated, actually, I guess a shorter wave, if I'm thinking correctly. So those different waves are what you're looking at. And when you see the length of that wave, if you will, you can understand kind of the state of thought that they're in. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, it's not 100% accurate, but I mean, in terms of whether somebody is sleeping or whether they're just about to go to sleep or whether, you know, somebody is highly attentive to something, focusing, solving a math problem of some sort, we can absolutely look at a person's brainwaves and pretty accurately understand what it is that they're going through, and even so far as to pick out whether they're going through some anxiety or possibly even some depression.
So this is really cool. So if with the EEG, which is, those are like electrodes on your head, so they can actually pick up those impulses. Is that right?
That's right.
So if you hook that stuff up and you provide external stimulation, you can go boom, and then you can see those brain waves change. There's an impact, and we can begin to experiment with a stimulation to make those adjustments, and hopefully for the good. Does that make sense? Am I misrepresenting that?
No, that's absolutely true. What oftentimes what I do is I take some EEG equipment and, you know, we have 14, 16 sensors, sometimes more, and we put it on somebody's head, and we take a resting measurement. You know, oftentimes I'll tell people, do the best you can to relax on your own. I want to see, you know, oftentimes we'll take a resting heart measurement in health, right?
Yep.
So say, you know, what is your resting heartbeat? So I'll take a resting brainwave reading from them as they're really trying to relax, and it'll give me a great idea of what's going on. From that point, I can give them some auditory or visual stimulus and then look directly at how that impacts what's going on in their brain.
This is really kind of cool stuff. So, Jeff, let's kind of just kind of talk about the different levels and what you can kind of see, just kind of so people can kind of conceptualize, and then we'll be moving towards, after we understand like the alpha, delta, theta, and that kind of stuff and what it represents, we'll start to move in terms of stimulation, what we can do. So first, can you tell us about the alpha brainwave?
Sure. The alpha brainwaves are one of the ones that have been studied most often, I think, in the research that is out there. And it's associated with typically light meditative states. It's usually between 8 cycles per second and 12 cycles per second. Oftentimes it's associated with super learning. In some research are showing that they can improve the rate in which people can recall numbers and words and things of that sort. It's a relaxed yet very alert but not necessarily engaged state in terms of active processing. It's sort of that relaxed, ready-to-respond state. And it's also associated with positive thinking and some creative problem-solving scenarios. And oftentimes, if people are really, really stressed and we do something to help them move into the alpha range state, we see that their mood is elevated and they get some reported stress reduction at the same time.
And just listening to you, just not the specific words, it almost sounds like it's you're relaxed but alert, almost kind of in a dream state. Am I misunderstanding that, or is that kind of like put a word with that?
Well, the alpha range is between eight cycles per second and 12 cycles per second. So at the lower range of that 8 cycles per second, you're really going to be at that state where you're, you know, maybe that moment where you're conscious just before you fall asleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're in that state right there.
Yep.
And but when you move up a little bit closer to that 12 cycles per second range, you're actually at that state where you're really just really relaxed but really ready to respond. You know,
wow.
You're not focused, but if something comes into your field where you need to all of a sudden switch and be focused, you can do that very quickly.
Wow. Let's talk about theta. I need to run to a break after that, but tell us about the theta range.
Well, the theta range is often associated with a dream state, although oftentimes when we're awake, we will have waking theta activity. Matter of fact, I mean, if we look in terms of the subdominant brainwave activity in the brain, we can pick up the entire range, sub-delta all the way to gamma most of the time. But the theta range is for the most part, associated with a dream state because it's from 4 cycles per second to approximately 7.5 cycles per second. It's really associated with creative inspirations and oftentimes a hypnagogic state, which really means kind of hypnosis, right? Oftentimes when we have people in that state where that's their dominant brainwave activity, they're able to visualize. People that, you know, will say that, hey, I just can't visualize at all, we put them in a theta state, all of a sudden they can visualize. Sometimes it's associated with deep meditation. Theta is actually a part of the sleep cycle as well, and oftentimes we'll get something called sleep spindles in the theta range as well, which is something pretty complicated, but we get these really big spikes. And it's associated with a sense of well-being and inner peace as well.
I what you said a second ago is to be able to visualize, if you can provide that external stimulation to put them in that state, it's interesting because now you're, say, I'm going to, for lack of, well, I don't know how to describe this. You push this button, so this stimulation kind of comes, and all of a sudden if the brain kind of goes into that state, it's kind of fascinating because you're actually controlling the stimulation. It can kind of control that brainwave activity that's kind of going on in your mind, which is kind of what we're going to kind of get to, I think, with regard to this and some of the research that you've done. Is that accurate?
That's correct, yes.
I need to run to a break real quick. For those that want to learn more about Jeff, his website is Jeffrey, JeffreyGignac.com. And, Jeff, you've got a new program out, Life Response Frequency. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is a program that's actually been out for a couple of years, but just recently I've retooled it. Because I'm always constantly innovating and creating new things, and I do a lot of testing and research. And so we've just re-released it, retooled with something that I call a passive brain fitness technology, which now includes auditory and visual stimulation in the form of videos, where we're able to stimulate people through the whole broad spectrum of brainwave functioning electrical activity. And so the life response frequencies, there's different levels. There's five main levels. And each level is meant to stimulate brainwave activity in a particular range for a particular type of purpose. And it's one of my best-selling all-time programs where we just continue to get rave reviews all the time. And I believe it's one of the most comprehensive, if not the most comprehensive, full-range brainwave stimulation programs on the market today.
And so everybody, again, to learn more about that and Jeff, go to JeffreyGignac.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Breaking news. Chad introduces the new digital edition of Attention Magazine, starting with the August issue and continuing with each bi-monthly issue. The digital edition is available for easy reading on www.chad.org. Through collaborative leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support, CHAD and Attention Magazine work to provide science-based information about ADHD to parents, educators, and professionals who treat the disorder, the media, and the general public. When you advertise in Attention Magazine, your advertisement that includes a website address will automatically have a link to your website. There is no additional fee for your digital edition advertisement. It's free.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Jeff, and we're talking about brainwave activity. Was really kind of cool. Before the break, we were just talking about the brain being a low-voltage electrical system, and we're really talking about how the brain works and thoughts, if you will, being electrical impulses, and they are at different waves. Imagine like a wave in the ocean. Some are short, some are long, and those differences in the wavelengths can be representative, or we can observe those wavelengths, if you will, in somebody's head by using EEG, and associating certain of those wavelengths with certain kind of states. And where we're going with this is that notion that if you use external stimulation, you can actually impact those wavelengths, which is really kind of exciting to me. We'll get into that more. But before the break, we talked about the alpha state and the theta state. Jeff, can you talk about the delta and the sub-delta state, which just for a benchmark, when we started talking about alpha, it was 8 to 12. We've been moving down in the cycle now. In a second, we're going to jump over alpha and kind of go up. But the delta and the sub-delta, we start talking about more sleep-type states, if I understand this correctly. So, Jeff, can you speak to that and explain those two?
Sure, exactly. Delta goes from about 0.5 cycles per second to 3.5 cycles per second. So that's a significantly slower and, a bigger, wider wavelength. And it is associated with deep sleep. If we see somebody that has a really big, dominant delta wave, we can really assume that they're asleep. The only exception to that would be is that some monks and people that have been meditating for 22 years, they can, while still being awake, put themselves in a deep delta state, although that usually takes a lot of practice, right? It's when we measure these people, these exceptional people, they can have a lot of waking delta, but typically we won't have a huge amount of waking delta. It's often associated with physical healing and recuperation and healing of the limbic system. And it can improve symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder as well. And, you know, because usually with post-traumatic stress disorder, we have somebody that's very hypervigilant. And we know that the limbic system is really has to go into something what we call parasympathetic recovery to really deal with things like inflammation. And naturally, this will happen as we sleep. If we have a really full sleep cycle, we'll go in and we'll get this parasympathetic recovery of the limbic system, and inflammation will be dealt with, and we'll really get this deep, relaxed state. Problems occur when we don't get into that great delta state when we're asleep, though.
And so that's the delta system. Talk about the sub-delta.
Well, the sub-delta is from 0.1 cycles per second to 0.5 cycles per second. And, again, this is also shown to have a really positive effect on the limbic system. Again, healing. But this is associated with deep, deep sleep. I mean, we can pick up some waking subdelta, and as well some waking delta in everybody to some extent, but usually they're represented, in very, very small amounts. It's very rare that somebody will show a dominant subdelta brainwave pattern while fully awake. It's associated with that deep, no-dreaming sleep.
Got it. So now let's just jump over alpha, which we started with, because we've been working our way into the state and kind of moving into a sleep stage. Now we start talking about beta and gamma, and now there's more arousal and more consciousness. Can you talk about beta and gamma?
Sure. Beta is commonly known to be, and there's some disagreement depending on who you talk to, but typically it's understood between 13 cycles per second and 30 cycles per second, and this is a wide awake state. It's associated with sensory motor awareness. When we measure people, when we see them with a big dominant beta brainwave pattern, we know that they're very aware and they're able to focus and be alert. We also know that when people are in a beta state, their ability to think analytically goes way up. The ability to learn new information quickly, and there's a significant amount of research that leans towards this way, that when their mental processing goes way up. So, for instance, if you were trying to focus on something while in a theta state, it wouldn't work really well. But if you're in that beta state, right, we know that your ability to focus and concentrate and learn new information goes way up. It's often associated with peak mental performance as well, and sometimes physical performance. It can be associated with stress and anxiety as well, but it's typically when the beta brain waves are more in a chaotic state. So when we look at a person's brainwave activity, we can get a sense of whether things are in balance or not, right? So we're looking at things in the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere, and sometimes we can tell when the beta activity is all messed up. You know, we have spikes in one area and it's uneven all over the place. We would typically think that that is chaotic beta brainwave activity, and we would associate that with stress. But when it's balanced, we get a really amazing ability to think and learn new information.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because the beta cycle you talk about from between 13 and 39, that's a very large range where we started with alpha and went down from 12 cycles almost to zero, and that was a much shorter period. So is that beta range between 13 and 39 cycles, is it just all that space, or what you're telling me, I almost think that as we learn more, we might be able to subdivide that up as we can become more clear on exactly maybe 12 to 18 is X and 18 to 24 is X, or is it really just because you're getting the cycles, there's more activity, so it looks like a bigger number, but it's a narrower window. I don't know if I've articulated that very well, but
That's correct, Jeff. I mean, there oftentimes beta is segmented into high, low beta, mid beta, and high beta. I mean, it all depends on who you talk to and how they want to slice it up. I mean, so the lower range of beta, around 12 cycles per second, 13 cycles per second, I mean, the activity isn't as fast. But as you move up the chain and you go to 30 cycles per second and higher, and you start approaching the edge of gamma, what we know is that the possibility of a person experiencing stress goes up, but that's only if the activity is really out of balance. If the activity is in balance, what we know, the higher up on the scale that we go, their processing speed and their ability to really process new information and really just get it, to process that analytical thinking goes up the higher we get on that scale. And that holds true in the gamma range as well.
That's fascinating to me. Jeff, I need to run to another break real quick. For our listeners out there, again, to learn more about Jeff and his life response frequencies program, go to Jeffreyginac.com. And everybody, when we come back, please stay tuned, because we're going to start really pulling this stuff together, because I'm a ADHD coach and a coach mentality, and I think it's really kind of cool because we had to set the stage, and I think it's going to be really fun to talk about the application that's currently there and what's possibly possible in the future, which is real exciting. So with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation about how the brain works. Now we're going to look at the practical application. You know, Jeff, with the brain being a low-voltage electrical system and that electricity in waves, and you guys can begin to identify this, what excites me about this is that notion of using external stimulation, if you will, to impact what's actually going on in the brain. And can you tell us about research about the short-term implications? Because I think what I understand from the science is that if you do certain things externally, you can impact those the wave levels that are kind of going on, like maybe moving from one to another. Can you speak to that a second?
Certainly. And this is something that just truly excites me, and it has for over the last 10 years, is that, our when it comes to our eyes and our ears, these are the two main senses that we really use the most to make sense out of our world. And so there's so many processes in between them that make up some of the largest part of the cortex, if you put them together. And when they're stimulated, there's parts of the brain that cannot help but respond. It's automatic, right? That means that you don't have a choice but to respond. And so as we take some very special frequencies and ways of delivering this type of stimulation, it goes in through the ears and through the eyes, or, it can just go through the eyes or it can just go through the ears, or both. And what happens is that, through all the crisscrossing, once this stimulation gets into the ears and the eyes, especially the ears, there's an immense amount of crisscrossing in terms, from the right side of the brain to the left side of the brain. What happens as this energy flows, and depending on how fast that energy is flowing right? It can have an impact on the rest of the electrical activity that's going on in the brain. So there was some really great research that came out. And again, this is short-term benefits. There's nothing that shows anything long-term, right? But it's really powerful. And this was a study done by his name was Dr. Patrick, and I don't remember his last name there. And what happened is that he produced these 40 to 50 minute sessions with beta stimulation, right? Because and gave them that 2 to 4 minute intervals with people, and they used and this is, by the way, peer-reviewed research. I mean, anybody mm-hmm. can do research, but this is peer-reviewed clinical research. They use a standard measurement, the WISC-3, Freedom from Distractibility Scale, and they found that their scores, the children's scores on this, improved, and they were all diagnosed, by the way, with ADD or ADHD, improved by 81%, right? You know, after using in controlling impulsivity. There's no evidence to show that this is a long-term gain, right? But it's very powerful. It speaks to the power of this type of external stimulation to be able to bring into focus a type of brainwave range, a brainwave activity that we all know to be responsible for attention and focus and learning new things.
Jeff, I respect you for saying, hey, this is what we know, but we don't have the long-term research there. But here's what's cool to me, and again, I respect you for saying that because we like to kind of like educate our population on what's real and not real. But what's interesting is what we also know from research is that if you pay attention to something differently over an extended period of time, that your physical brain changes. That term neuroplasticity has come up, and we have interviewed I can't tell you how many people that have verified that we know that that is real. We haven't come to grips with actually how to manage that specifically. We just know that it happens. And what I'm hearing you say is that we know that we short-term we can kind of do this. So I begin to think what's possible. I mean, think of a basketball coach. Okay, just I want you to shoot, 100 free throws every day for the next 15 years. To become an NBA player, hypothetically, and that long-term practice over a period of time of a skill actually becomes to develop where you improve that skill, or in this case, the situation, you actually practice it over a very long period of time and possibly physically change your brain. The science is not there yet, but it's exciting to think about the possibilities of that and saying, hey, if we can perfect these brain stimulation things, we can actually alter, we can control it to move in a certain direction that we're looking for. And again, this isn't there, but I got to tell you, from my perspective, an advantage of a coach and a coach mentality, that gets really exciting if you could break it down to mental exercises or regular stimulation. Thoughts on those comments?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And my personal experience has been this as well. Not only do I create a lot of these programs, but there's a reason why I'm so passionate about it, and that when I was growing up, I actually had, I was developmentally delayed, very seriously. I mean, up until grade 7, I was in speech courses. I had terrible problems with speech and enunciating words. I had all these different problems. Teachers had to make, all these exceptions for me. I had to do some things orally where I couldn't write properly. I had problems with reading. And so as I fought through all that, and I was very blessed that I was, born to a psychologist and a social worker. I had every type of advantage that I could have in that way. But it wasn't until afterwards when I discovered brainwave stimulation and I started using it that I saw my own faculties improve. And, to say that I've had any major long-term benefits, I would say I've had a couple, right? But they're not well documented. We haven't done any really specific research. If I continue using the technology, I get a lot of benefit on a consistent basis. And so to me, it's exciting. I think we need to put a lot more money and a lot more research into this to show what's possible, because we know that neuroplasticity is a real thing. And if we expose ourselves to all kinds of different really positive stimulation, people with ADD and ADHD will benefit from beta stimulation quite a bit, and also something that helps reduce the impulsivity, the more time they spend in that range where their brain is balanced and they're ready to learn, they're ready to take it in, the more likely their brain will stay in that state. That just stands to reason. It's just that we don't have a lot of that long-term documentation to prove that yet.
And so one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is this is just an intuitive thing. This is just the world according to Jeff, is that anytime we get into this stuff, the people that have the most it's an adjective I'm working for. I'm not doing very well on adjectives tonight. The most to gain as a result of some of this stuff is those who are actually kind of on the stream, on the outside. And if we can begin to use these types of external stimulations to train the brain, if you will, to get into these particular states to bring that focus, it's really, really kind of cool. Jeff, I got one other thing this is a personal thing that I'm hoping to get a little education on as we wrap this up, is that we've talked about the brain being a low-voltage electric system and these electrical impulses in waves, and they go down the neurons, but then they hit the synapses, and we have neurotransmitters that get kind of sprayed and uptake in this area to help this electrical impulse kind of jump in that. And can you just talk a little bit about this? Because I understand the brain waves kind of going down, but what impact is there of these neurotransmitters either working right or not working right and these brain waves? Can you just speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, neurotransmitters are really important. I mean, they're the things that facilitate the electrical activity that goes, you know, from one synapse to another, because we have these little spaces, right, in between.
Yep.
And the neurotransmitters are really conduct that electrical activity to go from one synapse to another synapse. And so, understanding the impact of neurotransmitters is really important. I mean, really, I mean, the brain is electrical device, but it's also a chemical device as well. It's like a biochemical, electromagnetic, if you were to really, you know, encompass it all device. And, you know, it's really important. We know that when particular states or brainwave activity is going on, we know that there's a likelihood of certain neurotransmitters being produced, such as serotonin, which is interesting because the vast majority of serotonin is actually synthesized in the gut, right? Which is, a lot of people don't know that. They think it's an absolute brain transmitter, but yet, when we see a really big abundance of alpha brain waves, we know that the chances of serotonin being produced is more, and then that encourages electrical activity to behave differently. Right, so, you know, it becomes a question: what comes first? Right, is it the neurotransmitters or the electrical activity? And if we have a deficiency in neurotransmitter production, does that affect the way, you know, the electrical activity in the brain? And I think the answer is yes, absolutely. I mean, if there's something in the brain organically that's preventing a certain like beta endorphins, for instance, right, being produced, then we would expect to see some deficiency in certain brainwave activity, but to me, it's one of these chicken and egg kind of questions. What comes first? What impacts what? And, you know, I don't know that we fully understand that completely.
Well, what I do understand is that the body and the brain are a system. We've had Dr. Charles Parker on before talking about medications, and as he said, you have to go through the body in order to get to the brain, and there's all kinds of things that can impact it to kind of get there. And it's a system that is all working together, and so I'm oversimplifying this by far, but what I'm hearing is that, you know, there's a couple systems here, and it's the chicken and egg combination of how those things kind of come together, and we're still learning more. But the thing that excites me again about this stuff is when I think back 20 years, we've interviewed people about the history of ADHD going back to Fidgety Phil and kind of way before that, and it's amazing to me because I think we're on the precipice of some amazing breakthroughs in the next 5 to 10 years with regard to that, because of our understanding of the brain and how it works and some of these types of things. And when I interview experts about neuroplasticity and I walk in, I'm understanding how the brain works, and then I begin to hear that just the concept of, can I use external stimulation to impact the waves of the brain? If I do that over a long period of time, will that physically change the brain? I got a lot of hope for some of that research and what's kind of come together. And I know, Jeff, you're doing a lot of stuff of actually putting some of these things together and applying them and looking at what's kind of going on. And at the end of the day, what I think I'm hearing you saying is, professionally, you're seeing a little bit of an impact. The more you can do that, possibly the more science can prove there's something that's there. Do you want to just comment on that before we wrap stuff up?
Yeah, I really believe that's true. I mean, one of the precepts of neuroplasticity and neuroscience is that, you know, neurons that fire together wire together. And when they go out of sync, they separate, right? They stop relating to each other. And so when we can use external stimulus and to cause a lot of our neurons to fire together that actually cause beta brainwave activity and reduce the amount of theta brainwave activity, depending on the situation and the person and the need, you know, I think there's a lot of possibility there because we're really, when we're providing external stimulation, we're really causing neurons to fire together. And it just stands to reason that over the long term, they would continue to wire together and they would produce, depending on how we do that, associated cognitive benefits.
So boiling this down to its most simple form, it's, again, I'm going to use an analogy. It's not perfect, but it's almost like lifting weights. If you can go in and use this stimulation every day for 30 minutes, or you can go lift in the gym for 30 minutes to exercise your brain or any other muscles, and you can affect its conditioning, to me it gets really, really, really exciting about how you can cognitively can control what's kind of going on, whether you're – I cognitively want – my body to do X by lifting weights, or I cognitively want to do these exercises to get my brain to kind of do these things. It's just an amazing, amazing kind of thought about what's possible. So, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show. Any final comments before we close this out?
Well, just this. Again, Jeff, I share your excitement with this technology, and I encourage everybody to really explore it and take a look at it, because oftentimes, you know, even just a little bit of brain training, just a little bit, right, can cause more neurons to fire together that will develop a habit, right? And if we have a habit of, you know, using our enhancing our beta or gamma brainwave activity, and we know those certain things are associated with other really cognitive enhancements, then, you know, it really doesn't take a lot of time to do it. And I think, you know, people that do take the time and try it out for themselves will really, really be amazed. I mean, it's made a huge difference in my life, and I've, you know, thousands of people from around the world have written in to me as well and talked about the benefits they've had over time. And so for, you know, just the little time that it takes, I think it's definitely worth it.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for coming on the show. And with that, everybody, again, to learn more, go to jeffreygignac.com. Check out Life Response Frequencies. And again, Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Jeff, for having me. Anytime.
Everybody, join us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.